Hi, thanks for joining us today. This is Bonnie Wallace, author of Young Hollywood Actors and the Hollywood Parents Guide. And today my guest on this podcast is renowned acting teacher Eric Morris. His books, No Acting Please, Being and Doing, Irreverent Acting, Acting from the Ultimate Consciousness, and Acting, Imaging, and the Unconscious, are used in colleges, universities, and private schools all over the world. His latest book, A Second Chance at Life, explores how some of the techniques he developed for actors can free all people from obstacles and emotional blocks so they can experience and express their emotions. Eric, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
I'm so happy to be here talking to you today. Your approach to acting is rooted in Stanislavski's method, but it's got a distinct system that you've developed over time. Can you explain your approach and why you think it makes for better acting?
Sure. First of all, the foundation of everything I do comes from Stanislavski, but I've actually, and I've been influenced by Lee Strasberg also. I watched him for 7 years at the Actor's Studio on the West Coast. And it's a 100-year-old system. What has evolved over my years of teaching out of necessity is that I say this humbly in a sense, but I've gone galaxies beyond the original precepts because everything that has evolved from there has gone on from the base. Now, without Stanislavski and without Lee Strasberg, there would be no Eric Morris. I'm very aware of that. That's the foundation of what I do. However, there is a missing link in the method. Now, here is what I think the uniqueness of what I've created over a period of 60 years. The missing link is that none of the master teachers, none of them, including Lee and Stella would say that acting is all imagination. Don't use your own life experience. Get off the stage. She did things like that. People did her summer courses here in L.A. when she was alive. The whole thing is I teach people how not to act and to become experiential actors. What does that mean? It means that the actor has to experience what the character in a piece, a film, a play, a television show, whatever the character's experiencing, the actor has to actually 100% experience that. The only difference is that it has to come from the actor's own living experience and the author's description of what the character might be alien to the actor in terms of background and experience. So it has to, I don't use the word substitute, it has to find a parallel of his own life to create that experience. And let me get to the core to answer your question about what I believe my specific and unique contribution to acting is. I deal with liberating the actor's instrument. How to free the actor, the person, to be able to be impressively expressive and impressively affectable and expressively able to express how they are affected by external and internal stimuli. This is not being done and has never even been done on the level that I've gone into in terms of instrumental therapy exercises. Now, don't confuse therapy with psychotherapy. Therapy could be physical therapy, could be any kind of therapy, which is helpful, but it's instrumental therapy that I use. At one time, I had 300 or 400 exercises that liberated the actor to be able to eliminate their obstacles, their problems, their fear, their emotional blocks, their dependencies, and all of the things that get in the way of being impulsively expressive. That, I believe, is the largest part of my contribution and the system that I teach. The actual working with the actor on a very deep, emotional, instrumental level. Now, I say this, and it's true. Even Lee Strasberg, I used to sit and watch him, and he'd ask an actor after doing it, saying, what did you do? Tell us what you did. He said, well, I was working for an experience I had where I argued with my mother about, stop, I don't want to hear it. Save it for your therapist. Just tell me the nature of what you're working for. I don't want to hear that. He was terrified. I was almost paranoid about getting personal with actors about their life. Well, the first 10 years of my teaching was a nightmare. People used to make up stories about me. They used to say, oh, are you going to Eric Morse's acting class? You can lay on the couch and tell everybody how your mother abused you.
Oh, dear.
Nobody ever did any of this. But people made up stories. You know how it stopped? Finally, after 10 or 12 years, people would go on the late night talk shows. Famous people. And they would say, well, you know, I thought I was an actor until I started working with Eric.
Hmm.
Then I really learned, I really experienced what it was really like to have the experience and express that rather than assume it. This is really something interesting. People say to me, you know why I want to be an actor? Because I want to be a lot of different people. That's ridiculous. You can only be you. You have to find the source of what you are to bring to the fulfillment of the author's intentions and description. And to do that. Now, the other part of the instrumental work I do and the liberation and the missing link in the method is that I have gone much further in the actual craft work, the actual craft usage, the usage of craft to fulfill material, dramatic material. Now, I think Lee was a genius, and I think a lot of teachers have contributed a lot craftually. When I was working with Lee, he dealt with obligation. What is the obligation of the actor's obligation to the material? But even that was limited to what is the character feeling and what is your obligation to feel that. My interpretation of obligation is much more broadly related to. The obligation is, what is the need of the character in terms of that piece of material? What is the obligatory need? For example, you would describe what that need is, and that leads you to your choice. There are three sections to my process: obligation, choice, and choice approach.
Hmm.
Now, what I've been able to do over a period of at least 50 years, 40 years, 30 years, sometimes, is I have 31 choice approaches. Now, what is a choice approach? A choice approach is the way you create the choice that you work for that will stimulate the experience or life that you're after.
Mm-hmm.
The obligation is to experience gaza, gaza, gaza. My choice is I'm working for this time and place that I really experience that in by creating it sensorially, which is a choice approach. I go back to that time and place, and it stimulates the life of the character in that scene. So it's obligation. There are 7 obligations. You want me to name them?
Yeah, name them. What are the 7 obligations?
Time and place. Where does this piece of material take place? Time and place. Time of day, time of year, time of season, time of night, time of day, time and place. Relationship. The relationship has 2 elements. Who is this person to me and how do I feel about them?
Mm.
Emotional obligation. What is the character experiencing emotionally in the emotional spectrum and all of the colors of the emotional spectrum? What is the character? It's an obligation. What is the character obligation? There are 4 parts to that. What is the character like physically, emotionally, psychologically, and intellectually? And how am I like that? How am I unlike that? And how do I do to assume and create and really experience those elements?
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the other obligations are, I'm trying to think of the order of them, a historic obligation. Where in terms of the history of the world did this take place? 12th century England or 1957? And you have to actually deal with accommodating that historic obligation. And then there's an obligation of a thematic obligation. What is the author's statement? And is your character the character who carries the author's statement? It's a thematic obligation. And then the last one is a subtextual obligation. What is the essence or ambiance of the piece? Like, for example, a lot of plays were during the Depression, winter set, dead end, something, I'm trying to think of that other one, I'm thinking, all these plays that took place, Wake and Sing, all of these plays that took place in the Depression area, and in, I think, Winterset, Miriam, the two main characters, his father was executed because of conspiracy. It was a time when there was a great deal of resentment for immigrants in this country, and they were from Italy, and they were convicted on conspiracy to do something, and he was executed. Mio and Mariamne in Winterset, the two things. So the subtextual obligation of the actor, and it's a director's responsibility also, is to create the essence of the play or the piece. So those are the eight obligations. Choices. Choice can be anything. It could be a sound. It could be a person. It could be an animal. It could be a taste of a food, something you're wearing, a phone call, a letter, a weather condition, rain on the roof, a distant whistle from a train whistle. A choice can be anything that you work for that will stimulate the life that you're after.
All of which will serve to make it more real to both the actor and the audience.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Time and place particularly. Now, the choice approach is the approach to the choice. It's the way you create the choice. I've created 31 of them. I'd say four or five of them are I came into teaching with. I got from Marty Landau, who I studied with, Lee Strasberg. But the others... the 31, there are five mega approaches. A mega approach is a choice approach so powerful it can create a whole system of acting by itself. Sense memory is a mega approach. Affective memory is a mega approach. Subpersonalities is a wonderfully humongous mega approach. Externals, getting a sense of a person, an animal, an insect, or an inanimate object and translating it into human behavior. Johnny Depp is using my work in terms of the all of the pirate movies. He's getting a sense of that Rolling Stone, Richardson, whatever. And I know for a fact he's doing that. And the last one is imaging. I wrote a whole book about imaging, acting, imaging, and the unconscious. Those are the mega approaches of the 31 choice approaches. Now, as far as I know, there is no, I've never run into anything that specific in terms of craft. Mm-hmm. And so this is not an ego trip. See, I learned a long time ago, you can say anything about yourself. It may sound like an ego trip. It may sound narcissistic. But it isn't if it's true.
Yes, it's
it
true.
Isn't if it's
not
true.
Not if it's true.
And if you can prove it, it isn't. Yeah. Okay? So... I guess that answers your first question.
Yeah, right? Yeah, it's an elaborate answer, but it's a big question, you know. I mean, we're talking about a many decades long developed approach,
oh,
a system, and so and you've got multiple books about it. Which, speaking of, while we're just talking about it, how can people find your books?
Well, they're in a lot of the bookstores. They're all on Amazon. They're on Kindle. There are e-books. There are several. They're on iTunes. They are. You can get them Amazon, or you get them at Borders. You used to be able to get them all at Samuel French and other drama bookstores in New York, etc. That's going out of business too.
I don't know about that one. Samuel French is, of course.
Drama books is historic. I knew the owner. He died. His wife took it over. It was a historic place, and that's closing too.
So makes my heart sick.
It's devastating. It's devastating. But they can get them all over.
Okay.
I mean, they're available.
So that everybody can just Google Eric Morris and books, and then they'll pop up in whatever
yeah,
city.
Sure.
Just do it.
And e-books. There are a lot of, you know, Kindle or iTunes, Amazon and Borders and all of the drama bookstores all over the country carry my books.
Good.
You know?
Good. It's important. Books... with this kind of technique, I mean, they're irreplaceable. Let's back up a little bit. How did you begin as an acting teacher?
Well, that's an interesting story. I graduated from Northwestern University. I was with a bunch of teachers before that, after that, etc. And I would always ask this question, how do you do that? They would tell me something about the characters. They think, I would say, how? Mm. That's the biggest three-letter word in the world. And I'll tell you why. Nobody could give me an answer. I couldn't get an answer. Oh, Eric, come on, you've had that experience. Think about it. Just recall it. Just reimagine. Imagine that happening. None of that is process. It doesn't work. Okay. So I was in a play at the Players' Ring, and Barbara Bain, the wife of Martin Landau, was in the play, and Marty used to come and visit. During intermission, we got to talking, and I told him how frustrated I was, and I wanted to go to New York and study with Lee Strasberg, but I was broke. I was married to my first wife at the time, and I couldn't go. He said, well, why don't you come and visit my class? I've started a class. I came here in the middle of the night, and so we're living here now. So I went and watched his class, and I thought they were all insane. But I was in the play. It was $25 a month. That's 1958.
Okay, you got paid $25 a month to perform?
No, I had paid him $25.
You paid him $25?
No, yeah. Oh, I got, I don't know, we only got five. We had a kickback. They would give us equity minimum, and we had to kick it all back. Kickback. Paul Levitt and Ted Thorpe. It was a shame. But if you wanted to work at the Players' Ring, which was the place to work, then you had to do that. So we did.
Wow.
Okay. So I was committed. I was embarrassed. I wouldn't want to go back. This woman is working for lava coming up her body, and she's doing sensory work at her eyelids. Her eyelashes are like butterflies' wings. And so I don't know, what the hell is this, you know? But I was in the play, and I couldn't cop out. I invested $25. So it was $25 a month. So I went back the second time. Now, the second time, I don't know. There's something happening here. It may be crazy, but there's something happening. Some of the work that people are doing are different, and it's real. By the third time, I was hooked. And I always say that for Marty, who was a Lee Strasberg devotee, he was a member of the Actors Studio, I learned A, B, C, D, E. I had five letters. With those letters, I could spell words, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
I, for the first time in my life, had a how. The beginning of a how. And so I was with Marty for 2.5 years, started me off on this journey, and I'm forever grateful to the man. Started me off on this journey that I'm still on, and the how drove me to create everything I've created. How? The actor gets up on stage to do a scene or a monologue, and when he's finished, I say, well, how did you approach that? How? And if he can't tell me after, you know, learning anything or working somewhere else, coming in, then he doesn't know if he can't say how. My people, after a period of time, when I say, okay, what do you want to tell us? How did you approach this? Well, my obligation was to... I had a couple of choices. I went from one to the other. My choice was this, my choice was that. And my choice approaches was gaza, 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 and that's how I did it. Well, it was very obvious that that's what I saw in terms of the experiential exploration of what you did, because they had a how. They know how to do it. After a period of time, they learn that, and that's what's missing. But a lot of people come to my class, and the first time they get up there, I ask them to introduce themselves and then do a monologue or anything they have worked on. And when they're finished, I say, okay, how did you do that? 97% of the people who get up there can't tell me how, because they have no how. It's all abstract, vague, theoretical, conceptual ideas of assuming or embodying the feelings. It's all nonsense.
Yeah.
I'm saying 97%, and that's the truth.
No foundation.
No how. No craft.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention the fact that most people in the world are really blocked.
That's a big one. I think about that because I think the finest actors have complete access to their emotions.
Yeah.
And wherever you have a block, you cannot express something that your character might need to.
Or experience it, that's
exactly.
That's what the whole purpose for instrumental work is all about. Liberating the actor's instrument. Now, my book, Freeing the Actor, is all instrumental. I couldn't have written that book when I wrote No Acting Please, because I didn't have the depth of knowledge that I do now. So that book is all instrumental, Freeing the Actor. And it's a popular book. I'm very pleased with it. But to answer to what we're talking about, that how, the how is the impetus of my life.
So you began as an actor, but the quest for the how turned you into a student and a teacher.
Right, right. Well, I was struggling as a... I did some very good work as an actor, but I'll tell you, I didn't know how or why. Sometimes I was awful and I didn't know why. I didn't know. When somebody would say, that was... Eric, that was fantastic work. I believe it was wonderful. I don't know how.
Which is scary because then you don't know if you can repeat it.
No, I didn't know how.
Mm-hmm.
I did 3 seasons of Summer Stock, had a ball, did some great work, fun work, etc. But I was working off of Alvina Krauss, Northwestern University, and all the, if I can say that.
That I learned.
I didn't learn anything, you know. My son, who is now gone, unfortunately, I miss him. He was at CSUN. And he changed his major 6 times. So it took him 6 years to graduate for 4 years. He came to me one year, said, Dad, I want to switch my major to theater. Do you have any advice for me? I said, yeah, Jeff. Don't take any acting classes. Don't take any acting classes. And he didn't.
Wow.
He taught my work for 20 years. He was a brilliant teacher. And if you... he wrote a book, too, which I'm working on getting together. It's called, I forget, Epiphany, something like that. He was a wonderful teacher. He sat in this chair, in this room, and I would sit there sometimes just visiting and watch him and just go, wow, he's so good. Mm-hmm. He's so insightful. I was very proud of him.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of people ended up being teachers after working with me for a number of years, you know. There are a lot of wonderful people out there. There's a guy in Australia, Charles Allen, who studied with me and for 15 years. Went to Australia. I was instrumental in getting him the job for QUT, Queensland University of Technology. He was there for about 3 years. They contacted me and they asked me if I knew anybody who taught my work, and I mentioned Charles. He went there, auditioned, they gave him the job. And so that also happened with Leonard Meenak, who was the head of the department. I also and Mark Majerian helped get him that job. So I'm very proud of, you know, the circles going out. You know, you throw a pebble in the pond and the circles get bigger until they touch the edges.
Yep, and you can't see how far they go. They go beyond your line of vision.
You just can't.
Which is exciting and kind of beautiful. We're actually sitting in your theater right now, which is super beautiful. I just love this space.
It's comfortable.
It is. It's really comfortable.
Yeah, it's comfortable to work here.
It's a good space. And you offer acting classes here in the studio.
Yeah, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday.
So what do you do in your classes?
Well, I do instrumental work, and I do scene work. I do monologues. I do all kinds of instrumental work. I do scene parallels, which I invented that. A scene parallel, why did I create scene parallels about 30 years ago? I'm not saying I'm the only one ever, but it's my thing. A scene parallel is exactly like doing a written scene, only you don't do the author's words.
Oh.
You identify, when there's a reason for that, you identify the responsibilities, the obligations, select the choices and the choice approaches, and then you do the scene paralleling the material. But you use your own words, and the reason for that is words have meaning and they breed concept. So actors get stuck in the concept and meaning of words, and they start tailoring their behavior to match their concept. When you're doing a scene parallel, you can't do that. So by the time they get all their ducks in a row and their choices are working, their obligations are clear, and they have a good choice approach or choice approaches, they don't fall into the trap of concept. That's why seeing parallels works so well.
That's neat. I am unfamiliar with that, and yeah. I totally get it. I love that. There is a list of incredible actors that sing your praises. It's a long list. It's extremely impressive. Johnny Depp, Jack Nicholson, Arnold Schwarzenegger are just three.
Aaron Eckhart, do you know who he is? Aaron Eckhart is a whole bunch of people that are wonderful character actors that have worked with me over the years. I worked with Rick Fox. Do you know who he is?
I don't know Rick Fox.
Major basketball star turned actor, and he's doing great. There's just so many over the years that I worked with that are out there. A guy by the name of Jonathan Rumi just got a series. He's playing Jesus.
Oh, my goodness.
Interesting story. We're having coffee next door at IHOP, and he's long hair, but I said, God, you look so much like Jesus. And so I got an email from him or a text saying, Eric, you must be psychic because I'm doing a series where I'm playing Jesus.
That's wild.
It's a true story.
Well, when I think about Johnny Depp and Jack Nicholson in particular, I think part of the hallmark of what strikes me about them as actors is that they are extraordinarily free. I don't know that I can think of almost anybody else besides those who are just so profoundly free in their approach. And clearly, based on what I'm learning about how you teach, there's a direct connection there.
Well, you know, to this day, I don't claim Jack as a student. I claim him as a contemporary, and he did take my class.
Okay.
But we were in Marty's class together, and we got very close. I love Jack. I mean, if Jack was never a movie star and never was successful, I would sit here and say, I love Jack. Because that's my relationship with him. He was always there for me in Marty's class. We were together. When Marty went to, I didn't tell you that story, how I started teaching.
No.
When Marty went to do Cleopatra, and I started teaching out of self-defensiveness, Jack came and worked with me for a period of time, actually. And Harry Dean Stanton, I worked with him for years, several years. So there's a lot of Joan Blackman, Sue Lyne, the original Lolita.
Wow.
There's a whole list of people. You know, Meredith McRae, who was part of the McRae. She did series. Lots of, I mean, there's 50 or 60 people that the name would ring a bell that I've worked with over the years, in and out. But you know what I never do? I never list them when I'm thing. I don't feel comfortable doing that.
It's tricky, that
one. Yeah. I was doing an interview in Atlanta once, and the interviewer wanted me to talk about Arnold Schwarzenegger, who I was working with at the time. And I said, you know, in this interview, you're interviewing me. I'd rather talk about me than talk about Arnold. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe that was a little rude or whatever, but I felt like it's a little tacky and hanging on to the coattails of somebody who's a superstar. I don't like that feeling.
Yeah.
I'm on my own mountain. I don't need to grab hold of that, the tail of a comet, because that's not my thing.
Yep.
You know?
I think people talk about that because it's like a shorthand for understanding, you know, your work is associated with people who are profoundly successful.
Yeah.
It gives a certain, I don't know, for people who don't know, you know, it lends a certain instant legitimacy that then perhaps allows
course,
them to want
course.
To look further.
And I want to tell you, I got 100 people coming to my class when Johnny Depp was on inside the actor's studio.
I bet.
When he was interviewed, it played about 6 times. And over a period of many years, people, I'd say at least 100 people came through. A lot of them didn't take the class because of his interview. So I'm grateful, but that was his decision. I didn't ask him to do that.
Yep.
How did I start teaching?
Yes.
So Marty gets a leading role in Cleopatra with Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton. And he's got to go to Rome for a year. I'm on a white horse in the middle of a stream, trying to cross the stream, and all of a sudden I have no horse. I've got nobody there teaching. There's no, Jack and I went and audited a class. I won't mention her name. It's a woman. And we're sitting at her. She was taught out of her apartment on the corner of La Cienega, where it turns there, and Fountain. And we were sitting on wooden chairs, and she was doing such nonsensical work. I'm sitting next to Jack. We were both looking for a teacher at the time. I said, Jack, I got to get out of here. Jack, I can't take this. He said, Eric, it's rude. Let's wait for the break, okay? At the break, we both split. So I'm sitting at home. I'm with my wife. We're living in a house in Burbank, one of those gingerbread houses.
Uh-huh.
And I'm thinking, I'm so depressed. I don't know what to do. I'm, you know, I don't have a teacher. I'm not really, I don't feel like I have the hands on the handle as tightly as I want to. So I was selling at the time newspaper ads for the Green Sheet, the Valley Green Sheet, the B'nai B'rith Messenger, et cetera, and so forth, telephone soliciting, telephone whatever. And I get a telephone call. I'm as low as I can be. I have no money. I can't go to New York. I can't go anywhere. I'm working as an actor, you know, but not enough to pay all the bills.
It's not steady work?
Yeah. And so I get this call from a woman by the name of Ann O'Hara. She was in Marty's class with me, and we did a couple of scenes together. I said, hi, Eric. How are you? I said, oh, don't ask me how I am. I'm suicidally depressed. She said, well, I know that Marty's gone. Have you found a teacher? I said, no. And I'm just ready to jump off a bridge. She said, well, why don't you start a class? I learned as much from you as I did from Marty. I said, no. I'm not a teacher. I'm an actor. I know. She said the magic thing, and if, God bless her. She said, well, you can promote your own work by teaching. Bing.
Yeah.
A light bulb went off. And she said, I'll be your first student, and I'll bring somebody with me. So I rented a little place I forget where it was. It was just a house, but it was, nobody was living there. It was kind of like, I don't know, a place. Somebody was living in the back. So in the living room, I was teaching. I had one student, I had two. Then I had three, then I had two. Then I had four, then I had two. Then I had five, and I had one. So
yep.
that thing was what happened. Kurt Conway, who was a famous teacher in New York and a Broadway actor, came in, called Marty, and he asked him, he said, I don't like teaching beginners. Can you recommend anybody? He said, Eric Morris. He's you know, he was the leader in my class. So he contacted me. At that time, I had six people. And I was teaching on the Long Pre and Highland. And he said, can I visit? I said, yeah. So he came in. He said, I have to leave in about an hour because I have an appointment. But let me just watch. So he watched for about 2 hours, actually. He was hooked enough to say 2 hours, and he gave me a note. And I opened the note after he left. He said, Eric, you're a born teacher. It would be an honor for me to have you work with me.
Woo!
So I was his associate, worked for him. And that helped bring more people, and the rest is history.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I started teaching, quite by self-defense. If not for Ann O'Hara, I don't think I would have ever started. Because the idea of being a teacher was kind of like a violation of my journey as an actor.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean, teacher? I'm an actor. But what it did for me is it made me a lot better actor.
It's really true. Anytime you have to teach something, it makes you inevitably better at that thing, regardless of what it is.
For sure. In one of my books, I say, I've learned more from the people that I've taught over the years than they ever learned from me. It was one of the things that, you know, I said in the book, and I think it's true. I really believe it's a true thing. I'm blessed. Because if I hadn't found this, my whole life would not have evolved on the level it has in terms of consciousness and awareness and perception. I have laser-like perception, you know, like a thing. it's not just a talent. It's a developable facility that anybody can develop over a period of decades. Tell you what, I ran into Bruce Dern at the restaurant down the street that closed. The one, what's her name? Woman, the restaurant. Marie Callender's.
Oh.
About a year ago. Hey, Bruce, because I knew him. He was directing a play that I was going to do. Long story. Eric Morris. He was with a bunch of people, and he turned and he said, "This is Eric Morris, and he has influenced decades of actors that you see in films now. He's influenced those people for decades." I was so blown away by that. I was speechless. And he wasn't just saying that because I hadn't seen him in 20 years.
Wow.
You know? So it was really a compliment. I have to say that of all my feelings, the biggest feeling I feel is gratefulness. Mm-hmm. I feel grateful. Mm-hmm. I feel grateful.
That is a good feeling to have as a bedrock feeling.
I do. I feel grateful.
Yeah, I share that with you. Back to your work. In addition to your classes here at the studio, you also offer intensives, and there's also coaching. So talk to me about those two.
My wife does. I used to do private coaching. I don't anymore.
Okay.
My wife has taken that over, and she has a wonderful following. And we do once a month intensive with people we invite when we feel they're ready for it. She teaches most of it. I come in on Saturday and teach the craft. She works with people for a whole year on a particular monologue, particular scene. It's very in-depth exploration of this process and her contributions to the process. And that's the intensive. And it's once a month, and I have people repeating it 10 and 11 years mm-hmm. and longer, and some 2 years, some three. Then we have jamborees. I've been doing those for about 35 or 40 years. We go up to Lake Arrowhead to the UCLA Conference Center. We have mini jamborees that are 3.5 days long, and we have a major jamboree in June that's 6 days. And in those jamborees, we get people from all over the world to come, and we do the work. We do scenes, monologues, scene parallels, and we do teach all five mega-approaches. We explore all five of the mega-approaches in that week. And people who have taken it 20 years ago are still talking about it.
Hmm.
People leave on the last day just like off the ground. It's a wonderful experience.
Wow.
We have one coming up in June 9th through the 14th at the UCLA Conference Center.
Okay.
And that's a wonderful place.
Maybe I should include a link to that in the show notes.
Yeah. It's five-star mm-hmm. accommodations, 3 gourmet meals. It's in paradise, 5,500 feet, beautiful lake, hot tub, tennis courts, swimming pools. Not a lot of time to enjoy them because we teach for 15 hours a day.
Woo!
For 6 days, between 12 and 15 hours.
Wow.
I alternate with my wife. So they get an intense thing. And when can they have a time off? Lunch. We take 2 hours for lunch. You have your lunch, you go swimming. You have your lunch, you want to go to the lake. You have your lunch, you want to take a hike up to Cardio Hill, you can do that. And after we're finished, if it's not too late, which it usually is, they can take a hot tub. Closes at 10 o'clock, so they rarely do that. But they can jump into the pool, and beautiful walks there. It is paradise.
Mm.
It's paradise. And I've been doing that for 20 years there, and before that, for 30 years, I worked. And I have a house up in Lake Arrowhead, and I worked in the house. Then we have it supplied to me. It was an overwhelming nightmare, but now we just walk in and we walk out.
Better to
and
farm.
UCLA is wonderful.
What is the youngest age that you work with?
I don't take anybody under 18.
Okay.
And the reason I don't take anybody under 18, the work is very, very intense.
Okay.
A lot of language, a lot of foul language, a lot of... it's just too intensive and too intense for anybody under 18 to assimilate. And even then, if somebody under 18 comes, I have to interview them.
Mm-hmm.
I got to make sure that they're stable. Because I let people audit my class. I don't charge for the first audit. I don't think you have to pay for something you're checking out. So what I do is I give them a chance to look me and the class over, and I get a chance to look them over. Because I've had some people come over the years who were very close to not being able to distinguish reality from fantasy, and I don't work with people like that.
No.
I don't drop them like a rock. I just say, you know, I don't think this work is really for you. It seems like, from what I get from you, I think you'd probably be more comfortable in a scene study class.
Mm-hmm. Just not a good fit.
Yeah, it's not a good fit. And because it makes me feel like it would be dangerous for them and for us.
Well, intensive psychological work can be if people
right.
are not stable.
Right.
And it's really wise to make sure you are screening
yeah.
for that.
I also must say that I minored in psychology in college, and I've been in therapy over a period of 30 years, on and off. I see a MD psychiatrist who's 95, known all over the world, every Friday at 11 o'clock, and this is my 11th year with him.
Wow.
My psychological training and background is pretty impressive. I never went for a PhD, and I never went for a master's in it, but if I have knowledge and training and background, even though I don't use that as such in my work. Now, my latest book is very psychologically oriented because I really feel that people suffer from the damage that they've experienced in their lives, and there's a way to repair that damage.
Let's talk about your new book right now. That's a good segue into that.
Okay.
So all the books that you've written until this most recent one are aimed at actors are about acting.
Yeah.
And
way or another, they're actually acting training books, or they're about acting and actors.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But this new book is something different.
Right. I'll tell you how that started. I was having lunch, maybe 5 years ago with Scott Steindorf, famous producer. Did Vegas on television. He's done Annie Gets Your Gun. He's done the wonderful thing about the time of Love and Cholera.
The Gabriel Garcia Marquez.
Yeah, he studied with me.
Wow.
And he sends me people to this day. We're sitting at a restaurant on the Strip. I said, Eric, this work is so impacting for everybody. You should write a book that reaches out to other people, not just actors, because this is life-altering work. I thought, yeah, I'll think about it. You know, well, that was 5 years ago, or more than 5 years ago, because it took me 3 years to write that book. Not because I write every day, you know. So the thing is that my feeling is that this work is so profoundly, I know this sounds like a big ego trip, but it's true. This work is so profoundly life-changing. I see it on stage. People go away for a year, they come back and they see somebody, they don't recognize that person. They don't recognize that person. I mean, I'm not exaggerating. And so I'm thinking, you know, we're damaged by so many of our experiences, and they relegate themselves to the unconscious memory banks, and that unconscious memory banks, those experiences liberate themselves subliminally into our consciousness. They limit us. They make us unhappy. They make us unhealthy. They keep us from being successful. And I created a system of going back there and changing the ingredients and the outcome of experience repetitiously and reprogramming the unconscious. And it works. It works. That's just one technique. Then I have another technique called second chance encounters. People are haunted throughout all their lives about, I just wish I could have told that person when they were alive. Or I wish I would have stood up for myself when I didn't. I wish I could go back and revisit and talk to express that to that person. Called second chance encounters. And it's a way to revisit all those things and do it now. Tell that person what you felt. Tell them how much you loved them, how important they were to your life. So it doesn't incubate itself as a haunting lack of closure and lack of fulfillment. The other one, and this is a biggie, is called retrospective objectivity. It deals with everybody has self-image, and we get comfortable in that self-image. You say something to me, you say, well, Eric, I see that thing. Well, yeah, that's who I am. I mean, yeah, you see that because, well, I can't help that. That's who I am.
Right.
But that self-image, we get embracing it and we get comfortable with it because that's who we think we are. We don't challenge it. We don't ever think it's incomplete or that it is a false self-image in many aspects. So the objectivity part of this self-image is taking the things in your life which challenge that, your accomplishments which deny a lot of what you don't claim, and then you bring that into your life and you update and you actually modify and you broaden and you stretch your self-image to a much more exciting self-image that allows you to succeed, be happy and healthy. And you see, I talk about all of this like it's not. I had an epiphany at 81 in this area. At 81 years old, I had an epiphany, self-image epiphany. I always had these are very personal things, but I don't care. I used to call him Freddy from Chicago. That's where I'm from. And Freddy is my name, Fred. I changed it. Frederick. You said, talk on my ear about, you can't do that. Who do you think you are? Are you delusional? Mm-hmm. So it's an inner critic. Mm-hmm. Okay. I live with that. And in spite of that, I achieved some success and went on my way, etc. Well, at 81, a series of things took place in my life. I was in therapy. I don't want to get to the specific because it deals with a famous person. And I had this epiphany, this discovery, that how I saw myself in relation to this person and to the world of this kind of person who I looked up to and pedestalized. And then I had some experiences watching and experiencing this person, and I realized that this part of me, this part of me that was objective and filled in all the blanks of my self-image that weren't filled in, I had that discovery and I started to invite the reality of my life into my self-image, and my self-image changed completely, almost completely. But what it did for me is it liberated me to believe that I am who I am and I can do what I do. So when I express this to a person, they say, well, Eric, how is it able you were able to write all those books and succeed all these years, but that self-image, as you say, is not complete in spite of it?
Right, like running around with shackles on your ankles.
In spite of it.
Yep.
In spite of it. But this epiphany, retrospective objectivity, liberated me just 6 years ago.
That's so exciting. I've started reading this book, and I've loved everything I've read so far, and I cannot wait to finish it. So yeah, I will be reading it the rest of it.
The guy who wrote the foreword, Angel Bieu, is an MD psychiatrist with a track record as long as my arm. He was in Vietnam. He's a brilliant guy. He studied with me for 5 years. He was exploring acting, and he wanted to learn acting. So he was with me. He wrote the foreword to this book, and it's a brilliant foreword. Have you read that yet?
I have read the foreword, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He really bares his soul about what he experienced and how it affected his life. And he's working with people on a daily basis. And I feel so proud of that, you know?
You should.
So I've got tremendous support from the psychological community. The first blurb is from my own therapist, Dr. Natterson, mm-hmm. who says we do the same thing, we just use different terminology.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's always been my firmly held position that acting, good acting classes are good for anybody and everybody.
I believe that.
You know, because of what it can give you as a human, regardless of where you take that in the world. What you're talking about is a whole other level, but it sounds like it's just really, really important for people to make available for themselves.
Well, I really believe that, and you know, I'm in the home stretch of my life. We I could live to 100, whatever, but even that's only 12 and a half years away. So, I believe that. What I want to do with the remaining time on the planet is I want to reach people and let them know that they're not trapped. They're not trapped in those damaging, impacting experiences. They're not trapped there. They don't have to live like that. I've done a lot of dream work, too. I'm working with the Dream Master. And the things that come up in our dreams and how we can use them to make ourselves healthier and more knowledgeable and more experiential about who we really are.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
That's worthy work.
Yeah, it is, and I'm very grateful. This woman Kelly Sullivan, she's a dream master, and she helped me write a few things for the book. Actually, you'll read them, little blurbs. But she's brilliant. She analyzes dreams, and she's written 5 books, you know, so maybe 6 maybe. So somebody put me in touch, a former student who teaches my work in Paris, Celiane Brown, put me in touch with her. And so I met with her a number of times, and her husband is a documentarian, a filmmaker. So you surround yourself with wonderful people, and you get wonderful stuff.
It's true. It's true. Mm-hmm. And there can be a real magic, a real alchemy when those different elements come together.
Absolutely.
And a new thing can be formed.
Absolutely.
Which
is
very powerful. I'm going to have links to your books at the end of the podcast on the show notes. Everybody look for the links so you can check these books out. I want to return to a little bit of acting stuff, because we have a lot of actors listen to this podcast.
For sure, that's what I do.
And I want to talk about auditions. You know, auditions, critical if an actor is to actually succeed in the business.
Right.
What advice do you have for actors approaching an audition?
Well, I can talk about it on 2 levels. One, if you are equipped and knowledgeable and have a craft, I know what to do, I know how to do it, and I know what to do, and I know how. That's 98% of doing anything, auditioning or working, whatever. I know what to do, and I know how to do it, and I know what to do, and I know how to do it. So training, being a craftsperson, and being instrumentally liberated and free, that's the biggest part. Now, I do believe there are some people out there who teach audition techniques on a very technical level, which I think can be, a couple of my students have taken those classes and have profited in mainly in auditioning and booking, because knowing the technical aspects of what to do in an audition technically is also very important. So I don't look down on that at all. However, the most important thing is to know what to do, how to do it, and to know you know what to do and you know how to do it, and you have a craft, and you're instrumentally free to function. That's the most important part. And if you have that, It shines through.
Yep.
It shines. The people watch. You know, the one thing I've learned in all the years, they don't know, these casting directors and often the directors and the same thing, they don't know how to get it, but they recognize it when they see it.
Yes.
You see, they don't know how to make that happen, but they can say yes.
They have it.
Yeah.
We want that.
Yeah. So that's it. Now, it's a wonderful thing to know how to get it.
That's the how that you've been working your whole life on.
Right.
What about any special advice for audition self-tapes, which is like a subset of that?
Well, first of
question.
All, it should be technically good.
Mm-hmm.
You have somebody who shoots you who really knows what they're doing. The lighting has to be good. There's nothing worse than turning in a tape that is substandard because it colors the person's response immediately, number one. Number two, don't self-tape until you're ready to do it. Don't rush to judgment. Don't get so anxious you just want to get it out tonight, Friday, so they get it by Monday. Take your time. It's better to take the time and to be a little late maybe, hopefully not, and to do a good self-tape because you're prepared to do it. Rehearse it. Use your process. Repeat it. And don't do it until you're happy with it. Don't put it on tape until you're happy with it, because it's not going to do you any good, and these people have long memories.
That's the thing. I mean, I talk about that a lot with casting directors and all the ones I've ever met and spoken with. You know, they do have crazy long memories, and generally there's a positive spin on that. Like, you know what? You know, they may have loved you, but maybe you weren't right for the role, but they'll never forget you. But it does go the other way, too. Like, if you really do a terrible job, they will probably also remember that as well and maybe not call you in next time or give you an invitation for a self-tape.
Absolutely.
So, you know, not to freak people out and scare you, but you do need to take a little care.
This was non-existent when I was an actor. Nobody ever asked me to self-tape. Come in and read for us.
It's like a do-it-yourself screen test the time.
But that was that didn't exist in my years as an actor. It didn't exist. And so the computer and technology has changed the business dramatically, dramatically. When I used to audition for something, I'd walk into a room and the same seven guys were there.
Right.
Seven or eight guys. It was like a joke. I'd walk in and I would see Warren Oates, or some other actor that I knew. Sometimes I got the job, sometimes they got the job, but I would walk into the room and we start laughing. The same seven people.
That's not entirely different anymore. It was just a few years ago when my daughter Dove was a teenager still before she started to really kind of break out, and that's what I would say, is like we go into a room and it would be the same seven young actresses all across town in different projects. That's still pretty real.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the self-tape helps. You don't have to look at each other.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm glad I'm not acting anymore.
Yeah?
For a lot of reasons. It feels different to me. It feels different. I used to go in, Saulmaster Lister, they were casting thing, Jim Lister. I would come in and sit in the waiting room, and Jim would come out and sit down next to me and say, "Hi, Eric. How's the family? How are you doing?"
Mm.
We talked for about 10 minutes, and he would say, "Well, do you want to read for this, or do you just want to pick up a script?"
Wow.
You know, I'd worked for him a half a dozen times. There was something. There was some tangible relationship thing. It was not Gulf Western. It was not Sony. It was something different. And there was a feeling of family about it. I knew the casting directors by first and last names. Ruth Birch, all these famous casting directors. Later in my life, I got to be very close to Mally Finn, who cast me in a movie and had me come in all the time. She sent me students, you know. She died, unfortunately. She was a wonderful woman. But it's different now.
It's more corporate. And yet, there are, in fact, it's always going to be a relationship-based business.
Yeah, of course.
And there are, in fact, people who, you know, they have true relationships, and you kind of fall in love with the people that you work with over time, and so another project comes on later on, you want to, this would be perfect for so-and-so. And those relationships, that's still very real. Like, that hasn't changed.
Yes.
And then what would be your advice for a young person who wants to be a professional actor, but who lives far away from LA or New York? What do you think are some of the best ways for them to move toward that dream right where they are right now?
Well, I've got 50, 60 people out there all over the world teaching this system specifically that I know about. In Europe, in Asia, in America, and they can contact me, or as you said, it should be on the website. My wife Skypes. There's a girl from Brazil who contacted us, and my wife works with her once a week on Skype. She's a fledgling actress who is pursuing a career, but she's out at the beginning. And then my wife Skypes with people who are doing a film or in Europe, whatever. So they can contact us, and my wife is open to Skyping with people. She's very busy, but I'm sure she can make room. She's working with a guy now, Roger, from Utah, who's got a lead in the film, and he has no background and no training.
Woo.
So she's working with him every day. So they can contact us, and she can Skype, or they can work with one of the teachers. I got a Facebook thing. I mentioned on Facebook that somebody asked me, who can I work with, and so-and-so, so I have a thing. And somebody just contacted me. I talked about Europe. He said, who's in New York? So I gave him a name on Facebook. Call Sean Patrick Folster. He teaches my work there. So all they have to do is either contact us here or look at the website, and hopefully those names will be on there. And if they're not, if they want, you know, just call me. I'm very reachable. You don't have to go through any jumps or, you know,
layers of agents and firewalls
or secretaries or high jump thing. Just call and I'll talk to anybody.
That's great.
Who wants to talk?
That's great.
You know?
Well, we'll have the links to your website and your Facebook page on the show notes here. And anything else you'd like to share while we're here together?
No, I'm just so happy that you're here and we're doing this. It's kind of you know, I know this is a largely promotional thing we're doing, but I'm getting something else from it. I'm getting re-excited and turned on and stimulated, and so I'm really enjoying this on a level beyond any other reason for doing it.
Thank you. That makes me so happy. My experience of doing the podcast is that there's something special that happens when you get a chance to talk about what is really meaningful to you.
Right.
And I think that's part of why people love the podcast, because you can feel that energy.
Right.
Because we don't get a chance as human beings, regardless of where we are in our lives, you know, actors, directors, coaches, you know, what have you, to sit and be present for an hour or so.
That's right.
To the important work of our lives.
That's right.
That has changed us, and, you know, probably also changed a lot of other people. And it's very moving, and it's inspiring.
It is.
To take a minute and get present to it, and to notice the own arc, the arc of your own life.
Absolutely.
You know, and I get this response from pretty much anybody who takes the hour to sit and talk with me, and it just fills my heart. It makes me so happy, Eric.
Yeah, well, we're on the same page. Mm-hmm. It's your life, it's my life, this is my whole life.
Yeah.
It's your life.
It is.
Know? And it's fascinating to just go back, because I don't talk about this on a daily basis, you know.
Right.
So it's revisiting things that you think about, things that happen, things that you want to share.
Well, and it gets you back in touch with why you're doing this work.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I'm very happy. I'm so thrilled and honored to do this.
Well, I am genuinely thrilled and honored to have you on the podcast. Thank you so much, Eric.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Hometown to Hollywood. If you enjoy this podcast, take a second and subscribe. Go to BonnieJWallace.com, sign up at the bottom of the homepage, and you'll get exclusive, inspirational stories and insider info sent to your inbox every week. If you're a young actor or just curious about how your favorite actors got their start, buy my new book, Young Hollywood Actors, on Amazon. And if you're the parent of a young actor, you can get the Hollywood Parents Guide on Amazon too. Finally, for one-on-one coaching, invest in a consultation session with me over phone, Skype, or in LA. Just go to BonnieJWallace.com and click on the consultation page. In 60 or 90 minutes, you can get peace of mind and a detailed action plan. Remember, the future belongs to those who believe in their dreams.